to our live question and answers back at home at the moment, which is good. Good to be back at home. Been away. The last trip that I just did probably been one of the longest trips I've ever been on, where I went right through Victoria, then up into southern New South Wales, and did quite a lot of 3 and 4 day clinics along the way. It was a really good time, and yeah, got to contact, meet a lot of people, and help a lot of horses, and yeah, it was a really good trip. And the last talk was at Howlong, which was a beautiful spot there. Then we went out to Condoblin when the rain came. So yeah, we did the clinic for 2 days in the rain, but we managed to get a bit done with the horses, and yeah, it was great to see the rain. It's good to see all the country coming back to life again. Dry, so but anyway, so I left and there wasn't much grass on the ground, and I came back to sort of green grass, and the stock is starting to look good, and the horses are all looking good, so yeah, it's been wonderful. Anyway, got some also good news. Jenny's on to finding a platform to put our talks onto podcasts, so hopefully within the week, we should have all our live talks to be available on podcast, so you can listen to them riding your horse, you can listen to them driving down the road. So hopefully that'll help a lot of people out, being able to listen to the talks in their own time. So yeah, we'll generally let everybody know when we'll get that in up and running. But yeah, so anyway, we've got quite a lot of questions tonight, so hopefully I can get through them all. If not, I might push a few off till next talk, but I'll do the best I can. First question's from Jackie Turner. I have two geldings. One is a 13-2 Clyde Cross. The Mini is the dominant one of the pair, but they seem to get on reasonably well, except the Mini constantly pushes him away when I'm in the paddock. I want to pony the Mini off the Clydesdale, but the Clydesdale won't walk beside the Mini. He always wants to be behind him. The Clydesdale, the Clyde Cross, is always edgy and ready to get out of the Mini's way. How do I fix this? So basically, Jackie, that I used to have that a lot. So I used to have a pony horse, and I'd get some dominant horses in, and the pony horse and would find it a little difficult with the dominant horses. So you have to have a bit of education on the Mini horse, enough that you can sort of, say, if you like, he should be leading, he should understand and respect you and respect your space, and he should have a steady mind with you. Okay, so when he's with the other horse, he's going to be pushing. The other horse is going to be wary of that, so there's going to be a bit of a teething time, a teething process of getting the other horse confident, knowing that while you're riding the Clyde Cross, he's got the confidence of you on his back, which means you can control some of the Mini's behaviors from his back. And once he understands that, then he'll get a lot better. So first of all, what I do when I lead any horse is I will say for instance you're in a yard, round yard, whatever, I will do a circle around the horse that I'm leading. So I say, for instance, use a circle as an example, like a round yard. You can put the little Mini in the middle, okay, and then the Clyde Cross goes around the Mini, okay. I know the little, sorry, Jackie, I know the little one you're talking about now. I lost the video. I know the one at the Collie Clinic. So the Mini goes in the middle and you ride around the Mini, okay. So you can put the Mini on the lead, and I do this with any horses that I'm trying to teach the pony, and I'm also teaching the pony horse lead off. So the Mini will be facing, that's the Mini, and you go around like that. You're riding around like the horse like that, the whole, all the way around. And basically you keep that Mini facing facing you. If the mini really wanted to kind of get a little pushy on that horse, you could put a little wave up your lead rope and just put a block on him and say, hey, don't do that. You might be able to do that on the ground. It's something I don't encourage people to go and wave their horses and, run them backwards with a shaky lead rope so they get a head brace. But if the little mini gets a little pushy, you can put a bump up a rope to say, hey, bump, stop. So you can kind of stop him, and that's something you could teach him on the ground. Just remember, if I teach someone to put a little wave up and put a bump on a horse to say stop, I don't want people to sort of go, no, let's just bump our horses to kind of, because all the time, because that it puts a brace in them. But when that horse starts to push on boundaries, then you can say, hey, that's enough, just stop there. So basically, if you went to walk up towards your horse like that, so you might have a fairly long rope, that between the little pony and your Clyde cross here, you might have maybe, I don't know, 3 meters of rope or something like that. So there's a distance. So this Clyde is safe, like feeling safe out here. And every time that mini gets a little lost, you can put a little wave up, like a little pushy in there, just put a wave up and just block him there and say, right, and let's just keep going like that, right this way, other way, around like that. And basically, you keep doing that circle till the Clyde starts to get confident at going around the mini, and the mini starts to know that, he's to stay in the middle. Then what you start to do is, as you're going around, I've got to get this right, you'll start to get this happening. You start to get them leading a little like that, and you make the circle bigger, and then eventually they lead side by side. But by that time, you've got a little bit of control over the mini to say, hey, you're not pushing. And then after a while, the Clydie, as the bubble breaks down, I realize that mini, he's getting closer to that mini, and the mini hasn't pushed on him and got angry at him. But basically, if you've got that groundwork on the ground and the mini's respectful around you, I know your little mini's a little nervous, so with people, but obviously quite pushy with horses. But once the mini knows that, you can say, hey, stop there. And then you gently get them to lead off with the Clydie in front, So leading off and the Clydie's in front like that. And it just takes a little bit of time. You might have to do 20 or 30 circles before you actually lead out. But I used to do that with all my young horses, and if I had kind of colts that I was leading, and they were a bit aggressive, I could keep them there, and I know I was at a distance, and I could, even if I sometimes rode with a flag. I mean, I don't know if your Clydie cross is good with a flag, but if you could ride with a flag or something like that, and then you can just put your flag out when your mini gets a little close and say, hey, that door's closed. Then after a while, the mini starts to get a little respectful because it realises you're in control up there, and then the Clydie gets confident because of the awareness of you, and then the mini softens, and then you both ride off together. But you can do quite a few circles on both sides before you start to ride off beside each other, and you slowly, they get closer and closer and closer, and you ride off together. It's not just a matter of just kind of leading them straight out and trying to kind of control them, but that circle principle works really, really good. And it's easy to keep control of the horse in the middle and get your horse confident. You're just breaking down the bubble from a distance, and then everything should work. And I saw someone answered your question a little bit before. They had they got their horse kind of respectful of and understanding of them on the ground. So it makes it a lot easier when you're up top on your horse. Thanks for the question, Jackie. And ponying is an interesting thing, especially when you're trying to control one horse and contain another horse, and can be a bit of a mess. But the other thing too is what I'd get you to look at too is getting your Clydie cross used to having a rope hanging out from it. If you haven't done a lot of leading and stuff off them, you hang a rope over a fence. You can drag that lead rope and drag a few things off it. So the Clydie, by the time you, because if the mini gets all lost and things like that, and you get a bit out of control or something, if you've already had a rope dangling on a fence and you drag a long rope across here, or you can drag a milk crate, or just anything, that Clyde's kind of, he's not going to be scared of that rope going off at distances or getting a bit caught around him and things like that. So that's also good to do on your ridden horse before you, you know, get the pony and a lot of other horses and things like that. Okay, Jackie, anyway, I better get through a few questions. Betty, are there any special considerations when dealing with an orphan, one that's turning five, has been insecure, we have worked on personal space, she squeals and spins like she's going to kick when she's pressed or unsure. New people especially get the full show. I've had her a year and done mostly connecting and letting her know she's okay with me. Now, well, the question, an orphan, is it an orphan foal that was orphaned like, by the sounds of it, it's not a potty raised orphan. What I mean is a young foal that's been orphaned and then potty raised, because if it's potty raised, it sounds like she's is it an orphan foal that, yeah, obviously has been anyway, if it's a potty raised foal, or because there are some drought orphan foals that were sort of nearly weaning and they've kind of been fed and but they're not so quiet with people, so, but there's also, you know, some orphan potty foals that, you know, been potty raised and but by the sounds of it, if she's potty raised, she'd be kind of used to everybody and not so worried when new people come in. But anyway, what you've been doing in the connecting work is fine. Getting her to sort of connect and feel okay about you. Now, guiding horses is an interesting thing, especially sensitive horses. Now, a lot of my kind of horsemanship, like what I may say horsemanship life, I've been around horses all my life, but from training horses and then trying to teach people to with their horses, I've been really trying to find ways of getting horses to operate without feeling so stressed or threatened by people. So just getting her connecting and letting you know, like you said here, letting her know that you're okay is really important. But then you're going to have to start training her and doing stuff with her. So basically, I always start on the leading. I do a lot of work with a halter and lead rope because I think there's a lot of horses that get stressed in pressure, head pressure especially. So I try and teach horses about that head pressure. And so I do a lot of leading with horses. Now, leading is a good lesson because it evolves to so many other things. So basically, leading evolves to guiding a horse on a circle, maybe sending it out in front so you can kind of prepare it for, you know, either long lining. You can walk beside it, you can walk from the hip, you can work from the hip, you can get that horse just operating around you. So once she's connected with you, the reason I like leading is because she can get a horse to put itself in different angles just by following a feel of a lead rope. You can put it on one eye, on the other eye. You can get her just soft with things like that. The other thing I'd be very careful of is understanding boundaries. So everything I try and teach is about, it's more so how you arrange the furniture, not how you just push on horses. So basically, the horse learns through finding boundaries, and the boundaries have to be fairly clear. So one thing with horses like that, that could be a little worried around people, but also get a little bit, you know, act like they're threatening people, is the clarity of your boundaries. Now, something I talk about a lot at clinics is, you know, people have been empowered with horsemanship, so what they've learned is to push the horse out of their space and use a wiggly rope or a flag and all these sorts of things, and then all of a sudden lost my train of thought there. But the person inside is still kind of not as strong as they should be. So I work on being strong, so that's why I talk about the tree. So when you're getting a horse connected with you, something I might do is I might just have a little flag at my side or something like that, or I can just bang my leg or something. But you can sort of show a horse, you know, when you stand and you get a horse connected with you, some of these horses that are a little funny around people, they kind of move and then they might be a little bit pushy in your space, or there's all these little things they do, they might rub, but you just be very centered and strong and almost say to yourself, I'm not going to move, I could shelter this storm. And what that starts to do is it gets them feeling, oh, you feel quite strong. And then if the horse was persistent or funny, you could just pop a flag and say, hey, don't get pushy on me, or don't, just on your leg, don't sort of chase it, just to stay very calm. Now, why I'm sort of going on about this is because it's the way we move around our horses, and it's the way we push on them and kind of get a little weak when the horse moves around us and say, don't keep pushing or don't do this, or that the horses start to get narky with and funny with. Whereas you have to be very, very clear in what you're saying. So, you know, so another way of saying it is, you don't become dominant or get respect by moving a horse's feet. You just don't let them move yours. And that's something I stand by very, very strongly is a lot of people, they're wishy-washy in the way they are around horses. So first of all, with the horse, it's insecure. It gets really threatened by people. Okay. So security comes through a confidence and clarity The horse becomes secure with that and understanding that you're okay and everything is okay. Yeah, though I'm saying I'm here to help, I'm saying everything's okay. I'm not saying, are you okay? Hey, can I help you? I'm not gonna go. You know, so when you're connecting with that horse, some people get in the habit of connecting and getting the horses kind of, oh, you know, listen to my breathing, I'm trying to help you. Sometimes they're focusing too much on trying to help the horse. I'm okay, everything's okay, and I'm here for you. And by saying everything's okay, you're calm, everything's okay. I've got confidence in the way you are. So being like that around your horse is going to insecurity. And then if she's insecure and a bit touchy, like I'm just clutching at straws here, like, you know, there's all these things that, but the other thing that I would handle her, the way I would handle her, and this is a little hard to explain on screen, but it's easier to do a lesson and at a clinic and show you this, but getting a horse, say a lot of times we impose ourselves on the horse when we handle it. We walk down, we rub down its side, or we handle it, or we go and put things on it, or we do that. Whereas insecure horses or nervous horses, and basically all other horses too, but it helps the insecure and nervous horses, is I get horses to kind of come to me. I'm not going to them. I'm not going to go and handle them. So I might say, well, okay, first part is I want to handle, because I might want to handle next. So I might get that horse leading and following, so I can leave it over here and leave it over here. Then I might put my hand up and then I just get it to lead past my hand or just lead past my shoulder. And then basically that horse has gone past my shoulder a little bit. I didn't go past its shoulder. I didn't go past its neck. It came past my shoulder. And then, you know, when I start to handle them, if I get the horse to lead, and then I'd lead it so I'd put my hand out and I'd just lead it so it rubbed across my hand. And I would just keep it following and moving away from it in a certain way that horse eventually just keeps following me, and then I can touch on it. And then basically what that ends up with is you can get that horse to lead past you and right down, so you can rub it right down its whole side. And that's the same with, you know, introducing a flag or a saddle blanket to it or anything like that. You don't sort of go into it, and you just lead it in a way that it comes and touches the saddle blanket. And And I do that a lot with horses because it gets them interested in following things. And then basically what it also does is if you get in a habit of doing that a little bit with horses, it makes your center really strong. So it's almost like you become the earth and they're the moon. So your gravity is stronger than theirs. Whereas when you watch someone handling a horse and they're kind of stepping in on their horse and they're rubbing it with a saddle cloth or they're always stepping in on it and the horse is sort of crabbing away a bit, but they stay with it and they move with it till the horse stops. But it kind of looks like the horse is dragging the person along, whereas I kind of do it the opposite. I draw the horse with me and say, keep coming with me. And basically it stops intimidating that horse. And for the horses that are insecure, it gets them feeling like you've got a strong energy about you and they kind of hang around that and that gravity starts to set. And then all of a sudden they're not crabbing away, they're not nervous, they're just happy following your ideas. And then when you start doing your, you know, more ground schooling and things like that, they're actually tuning into your energy a lot better. Hard to explain on this, but just working on a stronger gravity when you work with them is going to be very important, especially those ones that don't have a lot of confidence. And then I think you can get a lot done doing that sort of thing, and through that lead rope you can teach her to sort of walk past you, go around you, start to walk out ahead, like you can start to walk from the wither, start to influence a bit of energy and walk beside her and things like that. And when you're leading down the paddock, you can get her to lead behind you, you can get her to lead up beside you, you can get her to send out front and get her to go, oh, I can go and searching. And you know, when you send her out and she wants to leave a little bit, well, you let that rope out a little bit, you take a long rope so you can let it out. And she starts to walk along and get interested in searching and things like that and build her confidence. So there's all that sort of stuff you can do with her. And a lot of the, if on the videos and stuff, some of the, you know, the starting and all that, it's all good stuff to do with her. Okay, Michelle, my horse is on her own. She can call out to other horses over the road, but can't touch them. Does she need a friend? I like having the one horse though. Yeah. Oh, you shouldn't ask me that question. I think horses need company. That's my answer. That's my, there's a lot of horses that survive on their own and they get used to it and I've seen it that they kind of get used to it, but it doesn't sit right with me. Personally, I do like horses that have other horses that they can scratch each other and, you know, one can have a nice sleep while the other one's, you know, there to look out and things like that. And I think it's much better if they've got company in the paddock. But I have seen horses on their own, they can still sleep and they get kind of used to things. But you've asked the question. My answer is I believe horses are better with company. It's just a moral, personal thing that I have all our horses are herd horses, and I've only ever grown up around herd horses, and I believe that's there. You know, they're not solitaire animals. Even in the wild, the cults get kicked. You know, might get kicked out of one mob. There's a band of cults that join up. Seen any of our horses in their micro herds being on their own? They're always kind of with the others. And so Michelle, sorry I can't give you more on that. I know some people get sheep and stuff like that, and sometimes they become, you know, friendly with each other, but and it's company. But I think just having another horse is good for them. Erica, my horse is very attached to his herd. So much so that sometimes when I try and lead him in, he rears, bucks and runs into me, etc. in panic. I've tried being in front, changing directions when he overtakes me, but when he's in that state, it's as if I don't exist. Recently, I've tried practicing staying nearer to them and just walking back and forth within the safe space. Other days, he's absolutely fine and I've no such issues. What can I do when he's in a panic state to help him and what can I practice when he's calm? What can I practice when he's calm that will help the issue? Okay. So I'm going to tell you a little story of a horse that I helped. And it was a fair while ago in Germany. And I had to take this horse from the herd, and I had to get the young girl that knows the horse to catch it. But nobody could take it from the herd. And it was super separation horse, and it kind of just, yeah, same. But this one had just kind of rear and pull away and run back to the herd, and you couldn't kind of stop it. So I might have spent about 15 or 20 minutes around the herd getting it to lead better, educating it. Okay, so just taking your horse away from the herd and working on weaning it with you is not quite enough. If you're going to work with the herd and educate your horse with the herd, then you have to kind of maybe, you can obviously take it to the yards. I can see it by the sounds of it. It's not like you're stuck out in the paddock. But if you're going to work in the herd, educate it, get it to lead better. Lead, you know. So there's a couple of things that we don't do. One, we probably don't have our horses aware enough of us. So more, you know, we the horses are, you know, constantly, they might be leading and they might be staying with us, but if you look closely, they're carrying a certain amount of tension, and they're not quite there. They're somewhere else. They're with the herd there, but they might be kind of coping. So I like to know that they're with me. So basically, the balance, there's that old saying, feel, timing, and balance. Now, balance is like the balance of the scales of the yin and the yang. It's kind of the, you know, not the yin and the yang, I guess, but it's the balance of weight, okay? How much you do with this, and then how much you do with this, and you keep that even, okay? So a horse like yours, by the sounds of it, would have a fair bit of its thoughts elsewhere most times. So because of that, your priority would be getting your horse's thoughts towards you more often. Now, you could almost unbalance the scales in the early stages by saying, I need you to connect with me, focus towards me, and I want you to realize that I'm here and I'm centered and I'm strong, and you can connect with me and feel safe with me. And that's something you would prioritize. So whether you go out in the herd and do that, how you do it is basically when you see that horse's thoughts in a calmer environment, I suppose. So if you do get the horse away from the herd and it's in a calm environment or in the herd, if you go out there, you basically sort of, when you kind of move over here and that horse is not kind of understanding it, it can stay, it has its thoughts with you, then you just say, hey, thoughts back to me. And when the horse kind of thinks over there, you just get the horse's thoughts back to you. How you do it is, you know, depending on how extreme the horse is, you might just be able to step across to the side. But by the sounds of it, you might have to get a little big and say, hey, I need you to look at me, because your horse is obviously, when it gets big, it's not seeing you there. So basically, you get in a little habit of saying, hey, connect with me. So what you'll start to realize is when that horse is looking out elsewhere, if it's got used to being like that, it'll be more worried when it's like that. Now, there's times when a horse just looks away, and it's okay. Looking around is fine, but looking to a destination and in that destination kind of influencing that horse's ideas and saying, I've got to shift there, is basically not what you want. So if the horse is thinking and it's causing anxiety, then you get the thoughts back pretty quick and get in the habit of that. Now, the other thing you need is good leading, because if you're leading your horse, the horse has got to connect with that feel in the same way. So the pathway of feel, so the pathway through a lead rope or a rein is basically, if the horse follows a rein or a lead rope, it's going to feel better. So you can do that with your connection work. You can start to pick up a feel and get that horse to think towards you, and then it'll connect and say, oh, I feel better about that. And then you start to do that lesson in the paddock with the horses. You know, you might say, hey, I'm just going to walk over here, pick up a feel, connect with me, thank you. pick up a feel, connect with me, thank you. Until that horse is feeling real good. And then the other thing you can probably do is start to do little transitions where you can ask your horse up, so it speeds up a little bit with the lead rope. And then you can also teach it to feel on your ear when you're walking. So say, for instance, if the horse gets up and a little rattled in the herd, you just step off to the left, relax your energy, and the horse will end up coming in behind you. So if you're out in front and you did that, your horse went like that, and you did that, what happens when your horse follows you? Oops, sorry, got my hands going like there. You're in front, okay? So if your horse came up and he went like that and he went out, you're in front, okay? So basically, you just step off to the side and you'll end up behind your horse again. In front of your horse again, your horse will end up behind, and then you walk off and say, you know, come on, hurry up, catch up. And then the horse will catch up a little bit, and then it might go in front of you a little bit, and then as it starts to, its eye goes past you and its thoughts get out there, you just chuck a little, if the horse is on your right, you'll just chuck a little left turn, and then basically the horse will be behind you again. As you do a left-hand turn, you relax a little and step to the left and just walk off a little steady, and the horse might feel on your energy. But basically around that herd, you want to get that horse leading up with you and thinking about you and getting a bit, you know, a little bit better in the feel and understanding the feel, because if it rears up, technically it's not leading very well. So I'd really work on the quality of leading through the herd and in the state. So when I say through the herd, the end of the question you said, you know, is it when he's calm, what can I practice? Well, I'd practice better connection, and then better connection through the lead, and then I'd practice better leading. So not lots of transitions with the lead, so he knows, you know, where to be when you've asked him to lead somewhere, how to follow. And then what will happen is that'll override, because he's connected and feeling safe with you. So it's not just about the obedience, it's about he feels good, because every time he got anxious, you redirected his thoughts back to you, made him feel better, because once that wasn't on his mind and he had you there and you're calm and centered, you've got your roots in the ground, you're calm like a tree, then he goes, oh, this is pretty good. You know, I feel calm, and I feel calm because of your strength, and you say everything's okay, so it must be okay. And he starts to sort of feed off that vibe, and that need to be with the herd won't be so strong. So you'll be, you know, focusing, getting his focus, getting his thoughts towards you. Then quality of leading, how he understands the holder pressure, things like that, how he understands where you are and how to follow you and feel good about it. And then you get to a stage that you might be able to take him from the herd, and all that will come into play. So there's lots of things you can do, but yeah, they're probably the first, connect and then lead. Okay. Dawn, this is an interesting question, Dawn. I like it because it's sort of a bit about education and other ways you can sort of train. So I'm just reading the comments here. Oh, sorry, Bridget, I'll quickly answer your question there. If you're gonna buy a side pull, the one that I've got in the works, getting designs, not designed yet, not built yet. Basically, a good side pull should be strong and have like a little bit bigger rings, so you can put different types of reins through it. Made out of good leather, not flippy floppy, move around a lot. And it should come back and be designed in a way that it's not going to pull into the horse's eyes. Okay, so with side pulls, I'd definitely be looking at that. So some of them come down and they go underneath their jowl a little bit instead of having a throat latch. Their throat latch is more at the jowl and that stops them. But if with some I've seen it just a little bit too wobbly, and so the ones with a decent leather nose band and the attachments, it's hard to explain on this anyway. I'll have to talk to you about the little bow slot I lent you. But yeah, anyway, Bridget, I will get on to you about that one. Okay, back to the questions. Dawn, my horse was presented with a box of water to walk through. Ah, yeah, I know those ones. Yep. Hoof deep and 2 meters long. We walked to it, groundwork, pausing and rewarding his interest, sniffing and rewarding. Then he would try to scoot around it, including over me. He'd be led back around and lined up again. Same process. The pressure on the lead in the flat webbing holder he would just lean on and embrace. The lunge whip was introduced, getting closer until it was tapping him with increasing intensity. He continued to scoot around it. After about 15 minutes, we got progress with feet testing and resting in the water. Then finally going through, which we were able to repeat many times without pressure or resistance. He has never shown any fear of water before. So my question is about obstacles. What is the best method to encourage them through, over, around, etc.? Tapping them with intensity as instructed was really not giving me any positive feels. Okay, so tapping with intensity, it's a very, very common thing in leading horses and things like that to sort of use the sticks from either their shoulder through to their hip to get them to lead up. Now, understanding that method, I've tried over the years, you know, in my learning over the years, I used to sometimes, when I was teaching horses to lead and things like that, to load and things like that, and to kind of think about moving. I do that a little less now, or if not at all. So what is the tapping? What you got to look at, what is the tapping doing? Is it getting the horse to move off the tap or think towards the obstacle? So sometimes horses realize, well, that's hard there, I'm just going to move towards the obstacle. So no matter whatever method you use, it's all about getting that horse's thoughts on the obstacle. And to do that, good leading is one of the keys. So by the sounds of the horse sniffed the obstacle and then it thought it could sort of lean back on that halter. So the tapping method on some horse resistance, because the horse is just going to go, that tap's really starting to annoy me, and they'll either shut down to it or they'll kind of start to get narky with it or frightened or one or the other. So I would present an obstacle to a horse. I would get them thinking towards it. So I'd have the horse leading up pretty good, as in when I pull forward, that horse thinks forward. Now, I would tend to use a flag in front of the horses that kind of shut down and are dull and lean and kind of roll their eyes back. Instead of tapping them somewhere down their body and tap, tap, forward, because sometimes they just end up stepping forward off the tapping object or off the tapping stick, not necessarily leading up at the halter. So basically, if I went lead, think forward, and the horse was like leaning back and its ears were back and its thoughts were back and it was just blocking, then I'd pop the flag a little bit. And the horse would go, ooh, what was that? Or it'd go, what was that? And push back. But what that would do is get the horse to push and lean, and then, but it actively leans. So there's leaning and just blocking out and just setting. And then there's pushing back. Now, pushing back is the horse searching. So if the flag got that horse to push back a little, then the next thing it'll do is to come forward. So go back to the obstacle. If the horse starts to out and just keeps its thoughts elsewhere, I'd just kind of put a little feel on the rope. And if that feel didn't bring that horse's thoughts forward to the obstacle, then I could pop the flag a little bit and the horse would go, oh, thoughts forward and then leave it and then just let it sniff and test. And then when I see the horses back or start to dull out or something like that, I just pop the flag, lead, put, get the thoughts forward again. Now, the horse will realize that door's behind it's closed and dulling out's closed. So it'll start to think about what's ahead of it. And then you'll ask again with a bit of feel. And if that horse gets interested and thinks, then you leave it. But if it kind of just sets or leans back, you could just pop that flag and say, come forward again with your thoughts. Okay, so that's sort of what I do to get them to something like that. If their thoughts are on something long enough and they realize that the door behind them is closed, then they'll think towards something and go across it. The tap, 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 tap works, and it does work. It kind of, and by the sounds of it, it works, but I would rather get the horse leading a lot better. So away from the obstacle, I would get the horse leading very softly, leading up nice and softly. And have him really kind of loose with his, sort of bright with his thoughts and loose with his feet and nice and steady in the way he's leading. And then I would present the obstacles to him. The other thing you can do is, when it comes to scary obstacles, if the horse is really bothered at a distance, you're on a long rope and the horse can kind of, you find out where the horse's bubble is and you can kind of go like this, where the horse kind of deflects around it like that and deflects around. Eventually it goes, oh, I can come in and think towards it. And every time you see that horse thinking towards that obstacle, you just kind of leave it and let it think about it and give it space. So sometimes the obstacle might be 50 meters away and the horse is already aware of it, so you wouldn't be leading it to the obstacle if that was that far away. So, but yeah, I'd be definitely getting good leading. So the lead rope gets your horse to think forward. When the thoughts go back, just get the thoughts forward again until that horse, you know, crosses the obstacle. If the horse goes out left, you can say door closed. Loosen up when the thoughts come back in the middle again. If the horse goes out right, you can go door closed. And the thoughts come back in the middle. And after a while, if that door's closed, that door's closed, this door's open, the horse will investigate and start to walk through it. It's just when they block out that you need to kind of get something happening. And I guess your horse couldn't block out the stick. But the problem is sometimes they just move off the stick eventually because it annoys them. They eventually do it. They don't actually think forward to the feel of the lead. And I really like horses thinking forward to that. And sometimes a horse, you can tell the horse has been led by the stick too much, because when you pick it up to lead it, it jumps forward, but its ears are kind of backing like it's got something going to be chasing it from behind. So yeah, I hope that helps you on the obstacles. And then once they can cross obstacles through leading, then you can do, there's another way where you can send them across obstacles, but I won't go into that now. It's just, I'd get your horse to lead across things and then you can work on sending them across, because at least when you're in front of your horse, you can actually, you know how slow you can take it across, so only let it take a little step in and don't let it go too far. Heather, what is the coat that you had on at the Canamble Man in Blue? Yeah, that coat, I think it's made in New Zealand. I should have got it. Anyway, a lady called Rivka, who did a clinic with me with her little Arab, kindly gave it to me as a gift, and yeah, it was an awesome coat. Keeps you not drier than a dryer bone, and I think it's one of those good ones that you can wear out in the heavy New Zealand storms, but yeah, it worked really good. Remember Little Round Eyes? Little Round Eyes was a little Arab horse at the clinic in Victoria that I did. A little And I thought he made really nice little progress at the clinic. So Tina has been moving forward on our legging up trail rides, aiming at endurance, heading out on our third ride yesterday. I noted he was rushy, distracted, so concentrated on groundwork while leading him out. Just simple repetitions, with my goal being for him to breathe, let down, slow down, head and feet, so I could ride the planned trail. Unfortunately, in a hasty moment, he slipped and fell, minor skin wounds, but very heavy impact completely squashed my steel stirrup. So I led him home to care for his well-being. My question is, do I continue to move forward in our endurance training, or do I take more time back on groundwork in a secure environment arena? Just to add, I give rest days, body work, etc. First two rides, he was alert but calm. His third ride, he was not changed to diet. So my query lays with emotional well-being. First of all, Tina, are the rides that you're taking him on, are they step up endurance rides? Now, I'll answer it as in, what I remember him at the clinic, he was kind of going nice and, you know, he was green and he just needs to be, yeah, you can do groundwork with him, but I think riding him in a safe environment and putting more rides on him as well is going to be really important. So taking him, if they're little step up endurance rides that have actually got quite a few horses at them and things like that, I wouldn't be doing this. If I wanted to take a horse to an endurance ride, you know, some horses I would want 6 months of riding underneath them first, just so they're really confident out and about with me and things like that, and just a couple of horses who are friends. So I would tend to, you know, the groundwork's not going to help that either. Groundwork's going to, yeah, no, I'm not saying groundwork's not going to help. Groundwork is going to help, but there's a time that you just got to sit on a horse and chew up some nice soft kilometres of nice soft transitions and getting the horse thinking about you and thinking about the reins and thinking about, you know, just being guided and going places with you. So I would say just do a lot of the, just continue doing some groundwork, but in a safe environment in the arena, and then outside the arena in where he knows, I'd be riding him a little bit more there and putting some slow miles on him like that. And then, you know, maybe organise a friend or two to go for a ride with you a bit further, but slowly, like, get him to a stage that you can ride 10 kilometres away from home and come back on his own. That's probably more important. So I'd be definitely looking into just building up his, you know, riding foundation and, you know, getting, and same way, walking, as you know, probably like this, like I had a lot to do with endurance horses, not in endurance racing, but starting endurance horses. So I met a few endurance people over the years. And, you know, there's a lady that used to train in Australia, and she just used to, you know, go over and train in Dubai. But she covered a lot of miles on endurance horses at a walk, getting them strong in the legs, just walking them. And, you know, you can get a horse nice and soft in the reins, soft with you, just doing a lot of simple walk and trot kilometres, just not making them too tired, but getting them soft in the mind. And yeah, so just don't take him out to an outing to ride him. Just ride him where he's safe and build so you can take him anywhere. But start in the safe place first, but do a fair bit of steady work. You know, you can just ride him half an hour every second or third day, or every second day, and just, or, you know, every day if you could, you know, for a while with some days off. But, you know, and just get on him and just steer him and back him and ride him around the paddock a bit, and then you maybe try him around the paddock, and, you know, just doing heaps of in, away from and back, out from the yards, back to the yards. You know, you could, in half an hour, you could sort of ride out 100 metres, come back, ride out 200 metres, come back, ride out 300 metres, come back. You know, you could do lots of little trail rides that show him that he can go out and he can come home and he can guide anywhere with you and he's safe. And then once he's had a good bit of work, then I'd probably maybe take him to a little one of those little 20-odd kilometre ones where you're with a group. But, you know, you might get a few friends with you first and ride him and, with a few other horses and that, you know, keep his mind good. I see too many horses, whether it be endurance or anything, that just get cooked too early because they kind of, you know, they put the fitness on them and want to get them to an endurance ride, but then the poor little mind is not ready for it, so the horse ends up sort of fried, and then the people have lots of dramas. But if you kind of teach him and educate him to be a nice, good, solid, you know, horse that you've got a solid relationship with him and solid foundation, then you'll have an endurance horse that you'll enjoy going on endurance rides with. Cool. Karen, could I talk a little bit about bits? I remember you commenting once on the question and answer. It's because I'm not sort of right into the Western side of things. I just tend to ride in a snaffle bit, you know, whether it be some horses, depending on their mouth. Now, I'm not going to talk right deep into bits because there's so many different mouths on horses that if you really wanted to fit a comfortable bit, some of them, you know, you've got to have specially made bits that you know, for low palate and things like that. So, but what I look at when I look at just, you know, I ride in a snaffle, it's just a jointed snaffle, and it's a bomber bit, which I put on the youngsters. Now, depending on the size of their mouth, I might ride in a Frenchling snaffle, which has got a bit in the middle, you know, so it doesn't nut crack as much. But the bit I ride in, it's a bomber. The design of it, it's a loose ring snaffle, but it's got tubes, big tubes on the side, and they stop any pinching or anything like that. So if you had a rein that grabbed onto the ring, it means the ring can still slip and it won't gag, and that's why loose rings, I guess, are good like that. But yeah, the other design on the bomber bits is the ring is offset, so when you look at it, I'll draw a little picture here. If I've got a pencil. So there's the ring. I'll draw it here. Can you see that ring there? That'd be the joint. So see there, the way they design the bomber bits is the snaffle is, the ring is offset. You see that ring offset? So basically that's the bit that would sit on the tongue. So when the bit is there, it doesn't have that bit at the top there. Whereas most snaffles look a bit like this. Drawing number two, that's a normal snaffle, that's a bomber snaffle. So the bomber snaffle it's a smaller ring anyway. I should have done a bit smaller, but and also it's offset. So when the two are joined, you get you don't get any lumps in. You don't get any, sorry, that's a bad picture, but you don't get any lumps in there. Whereas this one, you'd have that bit there, so it sits on their tongue quite comfortable. And when I ride, when this horse is hanging its head knife, and when you ride, and if you're lifting your reins up in a certain way, you don't have the nutcracker effect that as much as you know, you're not pulling the bit like that, it's in their mouth like that, yeah? But basically before I ride in a bit, I would ride in my little, it's more like a hackamore, but it's a bosal. It's not like, it's a work bosal. Yeah, sometimes Americans call them hackamores. And I ride them in that for quite a while, or a halter, and then I'll put the bit in. And yeah, and just a, but yeah, I'm not going to go into the whole thing of all the bits, because I think you can get right into it, and there's so many different bits, and I don't go the Western sort of, you know, I don't ride in shank bits and stuff like that. I just sort of, you know, keep it simple. Last question. I'd better get through it. Colleen, a floating question. My horse lows relatively well, didn't it first? Is fine when the run bar is closed. Is good when the tailgate's been closed, but then he just goes completely off the deep end when you close the side door and walk away. He has also started to digress and get anxious when the storm cover goes down. How do I get him past that so that he stands calmly in the float without me present? He has also started to bite other horses when they are floated with him. Thank you. Colleen, your horse hates the float. Like a lot of horses, they hate floats. Sometimes it takes 18 months to train a horse for a cutting fortuity, and the person might spend half an hour teaching it to load or an hour. So 18 months of, you know, how long each day of training, there's a lot of hours spent riding a horse, training it. Not a lot in the thing that probably hates, that's probably scared of the most. So what I would encourage there is load your horse with the side door open. Because a lot of people do that to make the float look inviting. The float is not a nice place. Don't ever, we don't want to lure our horse into something that looks better than it really is. So I encourage people to teach their horses to load with the doors closed, except obviously the one that you have to let them in through. You can't, yeah, unless you jump them in there, I suppose. That might be a bit of a trick, but so don't have the side door open when you load them, have it closed. So basically, if you can get your horse in and out with you, then the next thing you do is teach it to walk up in beside you. So at least one eye on you, walk up in beside you, in and out, and then teach it to gently self-load. So after a while, you'll just gently send it in front of you. Now, the other thing I would do is I would put the breeching bar up, and I would teach your horse to walk to the chest bar, back to the breeching bar, walk to the chest bar, back to the breeching bar, till it's soft, okay? Actually, that's at the float. The other thing I'd probably also work on is find out when your horse gets anxious. That would actually bring it right back to the start of bringing a horse up walking your horse to the float from a distance. Find out how many meters away from that horse, that float, that horse starts to get shallow breathing, it starts to tense up, it starts to go, oh, crikey, here's the float. Find out where that happens. You might find that your horse gets frightened of the float 50 meters from it and starts to fret 50 meters from the float, and that's where you might have to start your lesson to really take in a proper approach if the horse has really got scared of that float. So basically, it's going through the motions of loading, but once you're gone, it just won't survive in there. It just doesn't like it. So it might have been taken at 50 metres away from the float, find out where it starts to get anxious, and then start to work slowly towards the float in a way that's like breaking down a bubble, as in, you know, when you catch a young horse and you walk in and the horse gets nervous, you step back. So you might actually keep that horse outside where it's comfortable, and then just slowly work in and out away from that float, walk it up. When it gets anxious, take it away again and come in, and till the horse starts to get close to that float and not start to get shallow breathing and nervous and things like that. That's another thing you could look at before you even load your horse, until eventually it gets back to the float. The other thing I would also do is I'd go back to loading it very slowly. Once you finally get to the float, I'd teach it to wait there and see if it actually thinks about every part of that horse float, if it thinks about the ram. Some horses actually load, but they don't even think about what they're doing. They just walk in there because maybe they were taught in a certain way that was a bit, you know, obedience training, opposed to getting it really thinking about something. I'm not sure. But get the horse to think about it. So stand it at the ramp and just wait with it there and stand inside the float until it starts to okay, I'll test it. You might find, if you give it enough time, the horse actually won't want to load, and it'll go, I don't want to load. And now you're giving me thinking time. And then you find out the truth. And then you've got to go through teaching it to load again. So you might have to teach it to load very slowly and carefully, thoughtfully, so it's thinking about the whole process as it goes in. So it's actually thinking about what it's scared of. Make sure the front door's closed, because it's kind of got to learn that that's what the float's like. And when I'm teaching a horse to load, I'll even bang the float. I'll bang it with a stick or my flag. I'll hit the roof. I'll just do that a few times. And the horse will get scared of that and go, oh, geez, that's making a lot of noise. But think about how much noise and how rattly it is when it's in there on its own. When you're in the car, it's going to be doing a lot of stuff that's probably worse than you standing there banging the roof or something. So get that horse going, oh, crikey, that's a bit nervous. I'm going to have to think about getting confident before I walk in this horse float. It's going to slow down the whole process a little bit, but your horse has got to start to look at things and go, oh, I've got to soak this up and be confident about, so walking in this horse float. So, and you would keep your horse's thoughts on the horse float, most importantly. And then the horse will start to think about walking in there, and you would go in and out and in and out, halfway on, halfway off, a little bit backwards and forwards, back. And forwards until eventually your horse is walking softly in and softly out, and thoughtfully in, soft steps in, soft steps out, soft stand. And that could take you some time if the horse is really, really struggling. So, and then when it's in there, walk it to the breeching bar, walk it to the chest bar, let it feel all those things in your control, and then teach it to self-load, as in, now you can do this all softly on your own, walk past me and gently gain on your own. And while the door's closed, and then you just send it in and stand at the back there with it, do up the breeching bar, rub them on the hip, you know, just walk away, come back in. This is education, and it takes time. There's no magic trick, as I said before. If it takes, you know, sometimes 18 months or even more to train a young cutting horse to go to a futurity, sometimes if a float is such a big thing for a horse, we've got to maybe start to think of a long-term approach that takes in how worried that horse is if the horse float, and build on its confidence. But yeah, for everybody, don't just open it all up and then close it. You know, keep it as closed as you can when you're teaching them to load. The first time you might have the door open on a baby horse, get them to walk in and out and get used to that walk and the drumming sound and all that. But then before you travel them, you have the door closed and maybe the roll down things on the side so the horse can go in the space at its kind of worst, I suppose, before you put the back up. And then you put the back up and then you undo the back and you unload the horse, and then, you know, you go about the whole process. But yeah, for the people who have a horse that's very claustrophobic and gets really anxious in there and starts to, because it is a difficult process, but just keep an eye on how thoughtful your horse is when it's loading and how much it thinks about that horse float. And that'd be, you know, something I'd really monitor and find out if it's actually really thinking about it and thinking about it softly, or you need to get it thinking about it softly. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, everybody, for the questions. And hopefully soon this will all be on podcast, and we can you can listen to them when you're going to work and things like that. So thank you, everybody, and I'll talk to you next time.